And welcome, friends, to the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. As we come back to the American economy, and one of the principles I'd like to really emphasize on this edition, from Proverbs 1, verse 10, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, let us wait to shed blood, let us lurk secretly after the innocent without cause, we shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us, let us all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them, keep your foot from their path. And friends, there's a point at which we need to come out from among them, be separate, saith the Lord, when it comes to ungodly associations, ungodly partnerships, joining in with the masses as the lemmings participate in the gambling operations and the redistribution of the wealth scenarios that take place with our major institutions today. There is an increasing responsibility on the part of Christians to do their own thing, to not participate in the systems that are violating the principles of God's word, especially when the markets are running on pure greed, when the price-to-earnings ratio is out of control because people are less interested in earnings and more interested in making a quick buck on the quick buy and sell in the markets. That, my friends, is just plain greed. And when the lemmings have turned Wall Street into casinos, it's time to get out. And that's what we've seen in the last 10 to 15 years. The markets thus far have been on an eight-week crash course. I think that's something we all need to understand. We're in a period of steady decline. We are officially in a bear market, entering into the next great recession. And recessions aren't getting any easier to get out of these days. The NASDAQ took 14 years to recover after the dot-com crash of 2000. 14 years to recover. This time it may take American industry 30 to 40 years to recover. After spending $1 trillion in stock buybacks, an artificial means of propping up the house of cards, where corporations would get into more debt, buy back their stocks, prop up the stock prices and hope that more lemmings jump in to invest more in their unreasonably priced stocks. That, my friends, has gotten out of control. $1 trillion in stock buybacks in 2021 to add more market instability in this unprecedented greed fest. Investors increased margin debt for certain stock market exchanges by fivefold over the same last 13-year period, from $200 billion to $1 trillion a year. This insatiable avarice inevitably has led to stock market crash and the Great Depressions that follow. So what does this mean? What does all of this mean? I think one of the big takeaways is we've got to get out of this. Jeff Botkin from jeffbotkin.com is with me today, and we are broadcasting from a hotel room somewhere in the state of North Carolina. Jeff, by the way, welcome. It's good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. Good to be here.
So here's part of what that means, and this is the way I have invested. I've gotten out of these systems and invested more in our own ministry endeavors and our own businesses, and I know you've done the same thing. And I think when more and more people get out of the larger corporations, that means the end of the large corporations, a decentralization of business, but not sure what happens when the large corporations go under. But I think as Christians, we should be more and more inclined towards our own family farms, our own family economies. We've been encouraging that for quite some time. And we think the family economy is really the way to go, Jeff, whether that be the family farm, a family ministry, or some other family endeavor.
When we look at the Great Depression in the 1930s, this is how America made it through. The small county governments pulled through. The family economies all came together, and they were able to sail through this without very much pain when they had family economies.
Mm. Family farms may become important again. 40.4% of production right now comes by small family farms. That means the other 60% is coming from the large million-dollar-plus corporations. The challenge is that the average farmer in America is in a ton of debt, $500 billion of debt right now. Farm bankruptcies have increased fivefold since 2012. And if city folk lose their jobs, they won't be able to pay high prices for food, which means that the farms won't be able to pay their debt payments, which means more bankruptcies for farmers. So, you know, you've got the supply-demand issue that kicks in. And this just in, the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City covers Colorado, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Wyoming, reports the volume of delinquent farmers farm, real estate, and operating loans increased by about 17% and 13% respectively over the past year. Meanwhile, the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, covering Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, and Wisconsin, reports the share of farm loans with major or severe repayment problems now at 8.3%, a level not seen since 1988. So the small farms are now in crisis because of their amazing out-of-control debt problem. So farmers have been talking about looming disaster, and this debt issue is definitely going to affect them. The big corporations squeeze out the small farmers by price fixing, and that's part of the problem, just like Walmart squeezes out the little retail outlets. Food prices at grocery stores are up 5.6% from a year ago, the largest increase in nearly a decade, while farm gate prices have dropped 4.8%. So the farmers are getting less, and the prices are going up. So what gives on this? In some cases, the contrast is very severe. Beef prices are 25% higher than a year ago, even while livestock prices for farmers fell by 17%. So farmers are getting it in the gut while somebody's making the money. Price fixing by a handful of major meat packers may be driving the problem. Today, farmers receive an average of 14.6 cents for every dollar consumers pay for food at their grocery stores. Keep that in mind. So expect more bankruptcies in 2022. Agriculture Department economist Kerry Lukowski says the agency expects U.S. farm income to fall to $114 billion, down $9.7 billion, an 8% decline from 2021. And add that to the problem with inflation, and you've got about a 16% or 18% drop for small farmers. This is going to be a hard time. We're heading for something of a food crisis. I mean, that's what this all adds up to, Jeff.
Yeah, it does. So if these farmers are going out of business, if they can't farm anymore, then it hits you at the grocery store because there just is not the supply that you need. So the prices are going up, and you are without the food and the protein that you've depended on. Here's Kevin, I just found this stat from Tom Vilsack, Secretary of Agriculture. He said 61,670 farm families are delinquent on their loans right now, or bankrupt, or are pending foreclosure. Sounds like the Great Depression, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's heading in that direction. So what's the bottom line? Bottom line, get out of debt, get some property, grow some crops, raise some, you know, cows and chickens and goats and sheep. And, you know, I think more of the farmers are going to have to do that. We're going to go through a period of time in which agriculture is going to have to be reconstructed in this country. And, you know, Sri Lanka is dealing with problems as well. They may be something of a harbinger for what's to come in other countries around the world. They're in big trouble. Sri Lanka's in trouble right now.
Yeah, they are. It's headed over the precipice right now. That's why they're in the news. There is unprecedented rioting going on there because they can't, you know, here's one headline that just came up. It says, they're facing a man-made food crisis. Many of their farmers are just simply giving up because there are so many new regulations controlling what they can do and what they cannot do. Another headline here, the old prime minister was driven out of office. His rioters are trying to burn his home down. The new prime minister says they are down to their last day of petroleum, their last day of gasoline at the gas stations. And this is where it's going. Many people have said this is only a harbinger of what is coming to the United States because we are facing many of the same pressures that they are facing, coming at them all at the same time, Kevin.
In this country, you know, I dealt with some of the issues that's facing our agricultural industries right now. And of course, debt is the big problem. We've always said that, you know, debtor is servant to the lender. The Bible discourages debt. And yet, you know, John Maynard Keynes, the homosexual pedophile that establish the modern economy in most of the developed nations around the world today over the last 100 years, told us that debt was a wonderful idea. And but eventually, of course, the piper will invoice. And then when that happens, we'll just see how things work out. Also, you said these regulations and such are somewhat of a challenge to our agricultural systems. And they are government regulations, as well as, I would say, the centralization of the development of our agricultural resources, such as these large chicken farms, large beef farms, slaughtering industries and such are so huge that you really risk the elimination of these animals if they get something like the avian flu. And evidently there's been something like, I've got 50 to 60 million chickens have been killed recently because a couple of chickens have shown up with this bird flu, and that's going to have an effect on egg prices. In fact, I think egg prices have doubled at least in our grocery store here in the Denver metro area. And so, you know, anytime this kind of thing happens, that's going to be another problem with supply. And again, if you had, you know, a million family farms raising 100 chickens, you have less of a problem than if you have, you know, 17 large chicken farms in which these chickens get the flu and then spread it to their friends, or regulatory agencies come in and says, okay, you got three instances of avian flu, let's just kill 17 million chickens. And, you know, we've got, with the centralization of production happening with these large corporations and the moving of the family farm into larger corporate interests, bottom line, you're going to see more of this kind of thing happening.
Yeah. And what you're asking, the question you're asking, what is the solution? And I think in one word, it's decentralize. We have to get away from the centralized agricultural economy, which is intersecting with all the energy economy. And Kevin, you spelled out a vision which actually could solve the problem if we could do this. Now, it's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard for many families to move away from a suburb to a place where there's a little bit more land to begin the process of getting some chicks when they're very hard to get a hold of. In our neighborhood, my daughter incubated some chicks from eggs that our hens were laying, and she gave some of those chicks to a neighbor so that they could begin their own flocks. This kind of thing on a very small scale, a very decentralized scale, is what's going to happen. I just spoke to a man on the phone who moved out of his urban area into a rural area with his children, and they've got meat rabbits now, they have goats, they have a dairy cow, they have several other different kinds of animals, they have chicks, and they're building up their own chicken farms. And these should be out of reach of the federal government when they try to shut down food supply.
Well, we've encouraged family economy from the very beginning. Family economics, of course, very fundamental to our vision. As we encourage family discipleship, we also encourage a family economy in which there can be something of a opportunity to do more discipleship as families. And the family economy, of course, being something that's been around since biblical times, the heart of her husband safely trusts in her, for he shall have no need to spoil, meaning that it's a family economy in which the wife, the children, all participating, Joseph feeding his father's sheep, Rachel feeding her father's sheep, Aquila and Priscilla, they were tent makers. This kind of thing was in place for 5,950 years until the modern systems destroyed the family economy and then provided something of a socialist system in which government-controlled corporations would hire the masses and provide womb-to-tomb security. But that's not the biblical approach to economy. That's not the biblical approach to developing the macroeconomy. You can read more of it and how the world runs and your part in it. It's a new book just released, just got copies at our home. So, friends, we're shipping copies now of How the World Runs and Your Part in It. It's really written for the whole family, but I wrote it at a 14-year-old level so that your children would understand the basic of micro and macroeconomy. The book, How the World Runs and Your Part in It, available now at generations.org. Now, in just a moment, we're going to talk about preparedness, but primarily spiritual preparedness as we face some very difficult times in America and around the world. This is a worldwide recession happening. So now what? How do we prepare for this spiritually and physically? That next on Generations. Hey, dads, time is running out. Your baby boy isn't a baby anymore, and soon he will be gone. Don't miss the opportunities to spend quality time with your boy while you have it. Come to the Colorado Father-Son Retreat this August 25th to the 28th. You'll enjoy an adventure, make lasting memories, enjoy real fellowship, and eat great food. Best of all, you will be encouraged in God's calling for men as you take time for intentional conversations to point your son to Jesus Christ. Get ready to be physically and spiritually refreshed at this intentional, fun-filled retreat. Go to ColoradoFatherSon.com to register for this August 25th to the 28th. Dads and sons of all ages are invited to join us at Horn Creek, Colorado. Spend 4 days and three nights of dedicated time with your son. 4 days of fellowship with other men and boys from around the country, all while learning from godly men about living for Christ in today's culture. Go to ColoradoFatherSon.com and register today before time runs out. And we are back on The Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson here with you as we have monitored the rise and fall of Western civilization. I just finished the book Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West. And we're certainly seeing some developments that we have not seen in our lifetimes. I think that's fair to say. Jeff, you're older than me. I'm not going to share your age, but you were an adult in the 1970s. I was not. Let me ask you this question. Do you think that things are worse today, not just in terms of inflation and gas prices, but in terms of just about every aspect of the economy? Do you think things are worse than they were in the 1970s?
Well, they are, Kevin. And when you look back at it, you compare it, you can see that, yes, they are for a number of reasons. But when I talk to my parents who lived through the Great Depression and my grandparents who lived through World War I, nothing has been, and I know exactly what they went through, the conditions that brought on those crises, we've had more at work today, right now this month, pressing down on us. Kevin, can I just read you a few? I mean, there's, you know, energy, the diesel fuel. We're having trouble getting supplies, and the prices on that are spiking. We lose energy, and we lose the economy. Kevin mentioned the avian flu. That's a problem because it's killing our birds. Fertilizer shortages the farmers are dealing with. They didn't get their crops in because the prices are so high and the shortages are so great. They didn't get their spring planting done. What does that mean for us in the harvest? The food plant fires. 18 processing plants experiencing fires. There's a water crisis. In the West, there's bad weather happening all over the Midwest. There's bankruptcy that we mentioned, 61,000 which are facing bankruptcy right now this month. And then there's the bottlenecks in the ports over in China because the lockdown, we can't get parts. We can't get parts for our tractors. There's the war in Ukraine, of course, choking off the potash and some of the other things that we need for farming and fertilizer. We've got the inflation crisis, the currency crisis. Those are just 10 of the things bearing down on us all at the same time. Now, I believe, Kevin, that Americans could solve one or two of those happening. And that's what we tried to do during the Great Depression. We were really good at it. But now if we've got 10 or 12 or 15 bearing down at once, then what? How big are the dangers? Are we spiritually ready, Kevin, to deal with all that at once?
Well, as I think about how we've come out of COVID-19, COVID-19 was the judgment of God upon our nation and upon the world. It came after Pride 2019. We get COVID-19 and effectively COVID 2020 and the crisis that shut down the world economy. And so this was a harbinger, but this is not the end. I don't think America has repented. I just don't think that our nation has humbled itself. I think the hardness of heart is as robust as it's ever been. As I preach, as I bring the word, I don't sense that the nation has softened their heart towards God, just not at least amongst the politicians, amongst the academic elite. I just don't see that. And we've got such vulnerability, economically speaking, agriculturally speaking, in terms of war. We've talked about the second nuclear age, the vulnerability and fragility of the nation sociopolitically, way beyond anything we've ever seen before. If God would destroy a third of Europe with a bubonic plague to prepare for the first Reformation, what might he do for us to prepare for another Reformation? I mean, who knows? But whatever the case is, we are facing some very difficult times. Now, I don't know what everybody's eschatological perspective is, but we are certainly facing the largest Christian persecution by geographical distribution in the history of the world. Open Doors reported that 360 million Christians in 76 countries have experienced high levels of persecution in 2022. That's 40% of the world experiencing high levels of Christian persecution. The world hasn't witnessed that level of persecution since the Roman persecution 1,600 years ago. Neither has there been such a universal opposition to Christ and his followers on the part of all of our major institutions, as well as such widespread global proliferation of this persecution force. And here's most concerning of all, for the purposes of our discussion here, persecution has returned to the Western world against those Christians who decried sexual sins advanced by men like Nero and Herod. I talk about universities and schools and corporate businesses and political states, almost all woke, universally endorsing homosexuality and transgenderism and they have persecuted Christians who refuse to support for these sins. Now, this has just happened the last 10 years. Now, will the judgment of God come upon the nation for this reason? Will the judgment of God come upon the entire world? As you said, we are more interconnected. There's more intersections, more connections between what's happening in Ukraine and China and elsewhere around the world to us than there ever has been in the history of the world. So what does this mean in terms of a worldwide depression or some kind of a worldwide war that may end in quite extensive devastation? So where are we? Now, here's the preparation that I would recommend. First is humility. I think there's ever been a time in which the nation needs to humble itself. And when we as a church needs to humble itself, it needs to be right now. There's no room for pride anywhere. The first shall be last and last shall be first. That mentality needs to affect our missions. Secondly, we need to experience more faith in the trials. When you see a growth in faith, and see many of these trials, including COVID-19, represented the initial trials with which God is bringing the fire into the churches, and he's testing our faith. Now, how to respond? Do we respond by more faith and encourage going to church anyway, despite the controls that the state is placing upon us? Are we increasing in faith as a response to the trials, or are we decreasing in faith? Are we experiencing more faith and more joy in the trials? That's number two. Number three, we need to increase the prayer life of our church. Now, the very day COVID hit, I got on the phone with my elders in our church, and I said, we are going to have a prayer meeting every night at 7 p.m. via Zoom. Brothers, what do you think of that? So, and we concluded that's the best thing to do. So we upped the prayer life of our church immediately. And then we, of course, called the other pastors in the community and held a weekly prayer meeting with the other evangelical pastors. And that produced an amazing unity. And we were able to protect our county from too much imposition of regulation that would have been devastating for the churches. We all able to open up our churches right away. We had a unity. We had a coalition that was able to speak with the local authorities. And it was a beautiful opportunity, but it was a weekly prayer service. It was a daily prayer opportunity amongst our local church members. And I think that's the way we respond. Is the prayer life of your family, is the prayer life of your church increasing in the fire, in the trials? That's how we respond to these sorts of things. We must not approach the future with an escapist mentality. That's really key. We've got to continue to engage battle. Now, we can engage battle at different battle lines, but we cannot respond in fear. We must respond in faith. We must continue to disciple the nations wherever we are. Now, at points, Jeff, we're going to have to revert back to discipling our county. But that doesn't mean we hole up in our homes and just curl up in the fetal position in the basement and just shake in fear. No, no, we continue to engage to the discipleship of our county. Obviously, there are points at which you cannot disciple an entire nation. We have to be faithful in small things. We may have to revert back into our local communities and do more discipleship at that level. But we certainly are not going to take up an escapist mentality. And then the challenges we face also must be attended by a rising confidence in the gospel, in the word of God, to equip the man of God for every good work. We need a rising sense of the significance of the word of God and urgency of getting the gospel message out. We must take full opportunities in the midst of the fire, in the midst of the wars, in the midst of the nuclear bombs dropping or the food crisis hitting our nations, we take full advantage of bringing the gospel to bear wherever we have that opportunity. This could very well be a bubonic plague that softens up Europe for the Reformation. You know, one of the first books that Wycliffe writes as the bubonic plague hits just prior to his reforming efforts was the book called The End of the Church. He almost got to the point that he believed this was the end of the church age or even the end of the world. He was rather discouraged, but it turned out to be just the beginning of a wonderful reformation that would dawn upon Europe. But he was a bit discouraged on the front end because he saw, you know, a third of the continent wiped out by the bubonic plague. But God was just softening up the world for the reception of the reformation message. I mean, come on, let's take full advantage of those opportunities. So these are some of the spiritual elements that I would encourage. Also, let's maintain a strong antithesis between the world and Christ, and we talk about that a fair amount on the program. Where the world is man-centered, we're God-centered. And especially in the terms of ethics, God's law must be upheld against the ethical rebellion, the autonomy of the day, where with the church is going to kowtow to homosexuality and wokeism and all the rest. Friends, that is a lapse of faith. That is the breakdown of the Christian church. No, no, we respond to the Marxism, the wokeism, the homosexuality and transgender agenda with a strong message concerning the commandments of God. Remember that the true church is represented by those who keep the faith of Jesus and keep the commandments of God during the very worst times of human history, as represented by Revelation 14 and verse 12. So we stand against the antithesis, holding up the commandments of God. Let's be strong, be very courageous, and press on with the word of God, the commandments of God, against the ethical rebellion of the age. And then finally, let's continue to assert family and church jurisdictions. Let's bring education back into the home. That's where it belongs. Let's bring medical care back into the churches. Critical, especially at this point in time. We're looking at introducing a medical clinic into our churches in our little county that will hopefully work with the Christian Medical Sharing Ministries. But friends, this is a critical time which we get the medical system away from the socialist system that presents a one-size-fits-all approach to healing, but it turns out not to heal, but to kill. And so hospitals become dangerous places in which the family jurisdiction, the individual interests of the patient, not respected anymore. Why? Because it's being funded and controlled by socialist systems. We absolutely must bring medical care back under the care of the diaconate of churches. That's where it's been for 1,000 years. That's where it needs to come back. And so let's be sure that our deacons, our elders are committed to this vision of bringing medical care back into the churches. And let's disciple on. Discipleship must replace schooling or the Aquinas distinction between the sacred doctrine and the philosophies built up on human reason. That has got to be demolished. Let's get rid of education. Let's bring discipleship back into the home. And of course, back into the churches, especially our future pastors must not be educated. They must be discipled. That's critical. All right. Well, that's some of the spiritual preparations that I actually shared at a conference out here in North Carolina over this weekend. But I just wanted to give you a chance, Jeff, to just step in and give us some of the high points that you think people need to be aware of as we approach the future now.
Well, the small units that we've already touched on, the family is so critical. You got to get your family together. Your prayer life does need to be upped. You need to get some economic basis for being able to survive in your county. With others around the county, you can diversify labor. You can start little businesses that serve the county. So you could be completely self-sufficient as a county. We've been doing that with farmers in the county to make sure they're diversifying what they do. So, for example, if we lose trucking coming into the county, we don't have just a bunch of farmers doing row cropping. We want poultry. We want beef farming. We want other things happening at the same time. We're trying to coordinate that. I think the first thing, though, Kevin, you've been doing in your county, building unity between the churches and the pastors. That is critically important to be done. Now, what we're talking about here is getting ready for hard times that the Lord is bringing. And again, we don't fear, we don't surrender, we don't shrink back, or his soul will not be pleased with us. We have to step out in faith, doing what we can to preserve the kingdom of God, preserving the lives of the innocent. And so I would say again that work on relationships with your mayor. He's the covenantal civic head of the county. He has duties to Christ. He needs to bow the knee to Christ. We can show him how to do that. I've been spending time with my mayor to talk about that. Also with the sheriff, so that he can be a constitutional sheriff to protect the county from intrusions from an ungodly federal government or even a state government. And then trade mechanisms. How can you barter? How can you set your own economy going in your county so you're independent again from a corrupted financial system? All these things can be done locally if we work together on it. And I'm seeing it happen. In Kevin's county, it's beginning to happen. In our county, it's beginning to happen. And there are linkages being made and unity being built that can get even one county to experience the blessing of God rather than the judgments of God, which may be falling on sister counties right around it.
Well, that wraps up this edition of the Generations broadcast. Jeff Botkin's been with me. And by the way, it's Jeff Botkin, jeffreybotkin.com, G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y, Botkin, B-O-T-K-I-N.com. That's the website for Jeff Botkin. Again, jeffreybotkin.com. And this has been a special area of interest and some gifts that the brothers shared with us and can share with our listening audience. Just basic spiritual and physical preparedness for the challenge of the trials that lie before us. Again, for more information on what Jeff has been doing, it's jeffreybotkin.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.